Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
In many ways, this is one of the oldest stories ever told. In Nigeria right now, conflict over arable land, mixed with tribal, religious and racial tension, is leading to a big upswing in persecution, forced migration and death. In the first 6 months of this year, more than 1,000 Christians have been killed and an estimated 30,000 displaced. Now, the Islamist group Boko Haram has been active in its attacks on Christians in the north of Nigeria for many years. You might recall the kidnap of those schoolgirls, for instance. But now, as climate and agricultural conditions change, increasingly Muslim groups are driving south, where much of the land is farmed by the Christian population, and the conflict for resources is giving rise for new types of militancy. Open Doors is an organization that serves the persecuted Christian church. That said, as they serve in countries where persecution is rife, they often find themselves helping people from across the religious spectrum. Tim Reed is the persecution analyst for Open Doors in Australia. Tim, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Stephen.
Tell us about Nigeria.
Yeah, so what you're alluding to there is the conflict that's currently happening, or the tension which is built and kind of peaking at the moment between the Hausa Fulani herdsmen and the mainly Christian farmers in the middle belt of Nigeria. When I say Nigeria's middle belt, in the north you've got a majority Islamic population, in the south is majority Christian. And in the middle, it's very much the meeting of two worlds, and there's always been a bit of tension there, but we're starting to see some real escalating violence. So in the north, Open Doors is talked about Boko Haram, and you've mentioned it a lot before, and that's been in the far north. But now in this middle belt, the tension is mostly due to many years ago, desertification started in this region, and a lot of the arable land is starting to disappear. And that has driven these Fulani, which is just a people group, the Hausa Fulani people, who were traditionally nomadic and were herdsmen. So they were cattle grazers, and this desertification has driven them slowly south to where Christians have been holding farms for hundreds of years. And pushing these people south has meant that this majority Islamic group, now in Christian-held lands, are encouraging their cattle to feed on the produce of these farms. And while it started out as maybe an economic factor, it's turned into this horrible ethnic and religious tension. So these Muslims are unfortunately attacking Christians, and a lot of the time they'll say it's reprisal for Christians trying to force the cows back or killing cows, and that does happen. We have seen that happen on more than one occasion.
It's understandable. I mean, not forgivable, but it's understandable.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sorry, and forgive me, I'm not judging. But there was an incident recently then in which a Fulani was killed, and in reprisal, five Christians were put to death.
Yeah, this is not unusual. So often the tensions will spill out and somebody will get killed, which is horrible. But then the reprisal seems to be much worse. So on the night of June 23rd, spanning to 24th, there was actually reprisal killings in a couple villages near Jos, which is in this middle belt region, and about 200 Christian farmers were killed in that one night. And that was reprisals for a similar incident. So we often see one person is killed or a couple cattle are killed, and then the reprisal attack is a premeditated, people will gather with machine guns and machetes and plan to attack in the evening.
Reports that I've seen from the area say that in those circumstances, the local authorities are not protecting people. In fact, they're making the situation worse. What do your Open Doors partners tell you about that?
Well, the situation is complex, and with the local authorities, often there's a lack of police presence entirely. So we'll see that there are police who are present, but when the attacks happen, they'll flee with other people because the numbers are just simply overwhelming. Or if the police reinforce an area, then it will break up the tension and it will simply move somewhere else. We haven't seen too much of the army getting involved in this, which it seems like it's at the point where it almost needs something like this, but that could be due to President Buhari's attention being held by Boko Haram in the far north, and so resources are just stretched too thin.
And what do we know of that president, and whether he's able to contain all of, well, it's hardly contained, but what do we know of that president?
Well, we know that President Buhari is actually ethnically Fulani, so he's from this people group, which these herdsmen are from as well. And he's been criticised repeatedly for not doing enough. Now, he has tried to put forward some solutions, but there does seem to be very slow and not much action happening at all. We know that President Trump actually brought it up with him when Buhari visited the United States a couple months ago. That said, there's really not been a great deal of action. Now, some local governments have actually tried to take their own actions. There was one government in one state who came up with an anti-grazing law, but that just caused further tensions, as the Fulani group said, well, you're simply trying to destroy our lifestyle. And so they said, we'll oppose the law no matter what. And there's just been no further follow-up from that.
Wow. It is of biblical proportions, isn't it, to imagine this level of enmity between people groups based essentially on the competition for land and resources, when in fact the desertification of the land is itself part of a stewardship problem that dates back over many generations.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen it turn into more than just a land issue, it's really exactly spilled out into these Christian and Islamic communities. I think, to give people an idea of the scale of it, the International Crisis Group said that it was about 1,300 people who were killed between January and June this year, and 30,000 people have been displaced.
Tim, what are the current efforts then to bring it to an end? Do we make anything of this, or is it just going on?
Well, for the immediate time being, it looks like it's just going to continue. But we are sure, as with all things, that God has this underhand in some way, and that this will be something that does resolve itself. So hopefully we'll see more government intervention. Hopefully we will see...
Well, who are the other players in the region that could potentially be part of a solution?
Unfortunately, it comes down to the government and the villages and ethnic groups. Mm. So there needs to be a solution along these lines. It can't really be external help, particularly in Nigeria, which is seen as quite, it's a larger state within Africa. It's certainly the largest population of any country in Africa. Economically, it's in the G20, and so it's seen as a more independent state. It's not going to see much external help or pressure on this situation.
Tim Reed is with us. He's the persecution analyst for Open Doors Australia. Now, let's switch our attention to Syria, where you've got a mixture of things happening, but one of the things that's happening is that these tens of thousands of people who sort of fled Syria, some of them are trying to come back, but the plight of those people is, again, a very serious concern.
Yeah, for a lot of people who are coming back, they're going back to communities that are totally destroyed, so very little infrastructure left. Their homes are often been totally bombed out, burned out. And as well, there's continuing instability in a lot of areas where the government has reasserted its control and Islamic State or other groups have been removed. There's still issues of reprisals and other things like that. A lot of what's driving people back, though, particularly from one of our partners in Lebanon, who's working with several thousand refugee families there, one Syrian family said, well, we're going back because even though, you know, all of our businesses and homes and everything was destroyed there, we have nothing here and we live in a slum. So it could be that many are returning home, not because they want to, but because their prospects elsewhere are growing up.
And it is their home.
Absolutely, absolutely. Many of them do want to return.
Yeah. What stories do you hear then about the people? How can you? I can hardly imagine how resilient you would have to be.
Well, the people themselves. Syria is such an interesting case because prior to 2011, it was barely thought of as a persecuted country by Open Doors. We had some training going on in the country, but it certainly didn't feature on our world watch list highly. And for many years, it had been placed lower and lower and lower. So when the civil war started and Islamic extremists kind of got out of hand. It was just unprecedented, but we had a network in place. People are resilient because they've seen a Syria which in the past has been quite economically promising for their children. It's a place which has been very stable in the Middle East, and it's been a place of great hope. And so many people want to see that happen for Syria again, and certainly we do as well. For the Christian community specifically, the Christians have been suffering for many years now, but as I said, it wasn't necessarily persecuted that heavily before. What we're seeing, actually one pastor in particular, he said something amazing. His name's Pastor Edward. He's one of the pastors who we've been kind of working with a little bit through partners. He said that a lot of Christians have fled the country, but it's his calling and many of the Christians who've remained to stay, and hopefully more will return, because the church is like Christ's ambassador on earth. If a country is to remove its ambassador from any other nation, it's a tragedy. It means that everything's cut off. But if Christ was to remove his ambassador, if the church was to leave Syria, it would be devastating.
Yes.
And so he sees it as his role and the role of Christians who are returning and who have stayed to be Christ's ambassadors and show love to the people who are there.
But it's so true, and I think it's Paul, isn't it, who says, we are Christ's ambassadors. It is as if God was making his appeal through us. Well, if there was no ambassador, what a thought. What a thought. You think about what happens in diplomatic circles. We've withdrawn our ambassador for consultations. It's a big statement. Well, that's a huge responsibility. Do they carry the weight of that with everything else?
Well, I think they do, but they carry that weight, as with all things in Christ, they carry it with great joy.
Yeah.
And so we see these Christians who have really opened up their churches. Mm. And it's not just Christians who are receiving help. Anyone who comes to these churches, which is, of course, majority of Christians, and certainly Christians in the first instance, but anyone who comes to these churches are finding people who are welcoming them in and giving them an opportunity. One church in particular, really exciting for the Christians listening to this, they'll love this. One church, the pastor said, you know, I've told my congregation to stop coming to church. And we sort of thought, well, that's not a very good sign. What's going on here? And he said, the reason I've told them to stop coming to church is I have so many Muslims seeking Christ coming through the doors that I want the Christians to stop taking seats from these people. So we see that the Christians really are ambassadors for God in this country and a light. And part of what comes with the Christian faith is overwhelming joy. It's spoken about in 1 Peter, the end result of our faith, the salvation of our souls, but an inexpressible and glorious joy, and we see that.
And Tim Reed of Open Doors, don't you think we can forget in our day-to-day existence, in our worrying about the things around, we can actually forget that Christ is victorious.
Amen. That's all I have to say to that.
I mean, you know, we know the end of the story. I read to the end of the book. Turns out quite well.
Well, it does. It does for those who believe and follow
Christ. For those who believe and follow Christ, yes.
Mm.
And that's the work we're about. Because if that doesn't define, this is the eschatology of our program. If that, I mean,
eschatology means the reforming of all things after the end for those listening.
Thank you, Tim. Let's have you sit with me and translate for me every week. That's awesome. And it's this, that if we know that end, then it has to define our present. If that's your future, then living for anything else doesn't matter.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think that that's really relevant for the persecuted church in particular,
right?
Because while there's these horrible sufferings, we see this in Hebrews, in the book of Hebrews, when you read it, there are horrible sufferings that are facing the church. And yet we're reminded constantly, hold on, remember what is to come, because Christ has already won this war. You're simply in a battle now. And so we see Christians all over the world in persecution who have this incredible joy. I know one Christian who I met personally in Central Asia, and he was telling me about the horrific things happening around him. On the way to church, he pointed out a building which was about 60 meters away. We were driving in the car, and he said, in that building is a brother who nobody has seen for 2 weeks. He's in there because the secret police have beaten him so badly they don't want anyone to testify as to what he looks like currently. And I said, what did he do? And this partner, he shared that this Christian who was in the building, he simply had a book on prayer in his car, and the police had stopped him and found it and said that it was extremist literature. And so driving to church, I had this picture that the church would probably be this tiny gathering of believers who were quiet and
timid, sat afraid.
Exactly. But when we arrived, it was the total opposite. There was a big cross on the gate of the church to start with.
Wow.
And everyone was in the street congregating.
Wow.
And the reason they were doing that was they wanted to make sure that everyone who lived next door to this church knew they lived next door to a church and knew what the Christians stood for. They had such joy welling out of them, they had to share Jesus. And we see this all throughout the persecuted church. The eschatology, yes, the end, we know what is to come. And so that should shape how we live now.
Wow. Tim, you've been a cause of hope for us tonight. Thank you so much for being with
us. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
No, our pleasure indeed. Tim Reed is from Open Doors, and they've got a terrific website which gives you some terrific resources if you're concerned about the persecuted church, and I know that you are. opendoors.org.au. opendoors.org.au. There's even a feature there on Nigeria, which in light of our conversation you'll find interesting.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.